everybody. I'm Courtney. I'm an anorexic and compulsive eater. I'm also a body center of the highest order. I was born a compulsive eater. I think if you believe that it's possible. I remember very early on, eating so much at dinner that I was sitting over in my chair quickly. And it was a joke. My brother used to tell me a lot of kids in the bathroom with a big dad in our family how much I could eat, how much I could weigh. That came from the fact that I had a very chaotic household. I should stop now and say, if you don't like cursing, sorry, it'll probably happen. To warn you, this is a real and ugly disease, and I am not going to use words. I was born in Connecticut. I grew up in a household of overachievers. In fact, according to my parents, any minus was almost failure. So there was literally no. My mom, once I brought them 92, my mother said, "Where are the other 8 points?" Those are the people that I came from. My father felt very strongly that as a black person, you could not. You had to be twice as good to be perceived as half as competent. So, and that's the thing that he drilled into me. We all feel different from one way or another. Everyone has a story about how they feel different. One of the great things about coming to this program and reading books is that pretty much every story has a line in it about I was different from everyone else. Well, my difference from everyone else is that where I grew up and where I worked then, there were 4 black families. One of those us, the other one, my cousin, was from here. And then my cousin moved away. So I was alone. And I didn't understand why. I didn't understand why my parents made this choice. I saw the black people on TV. They must be somewhere. But I'm not. So I was different on to begin. I was different. There was different. I had different hair, skin. You understand? Your hair gets wet all that time. Okay, everybody has something different. For me, what happened was that my parents were, the parents had me in their 30s, which was odd at the time. Now it's really common, but. And they had done a lot of civil rights marching, and all their white friends were Jewish from that period. So they encouraged me to go to Jewish homes, so I adopted a secondary identity. I'm not Jewish, I'm actually a Christian. But I learned Yiddish, I learned some Hebrew, I learned some prayers, and honestly, that identity helped me navigate the difference. It was the beginning of putting something on. Now, it is who I am, definitely, it's not fake, but it was the beginning of putting something on to be different, to fit in. I think we all have a story about putting something on to be different, to be similar, to fit. So, okay, I'm growing up, and I'm taller than everyone else. This is genetic. I have big feet, I'm a big person, I'm really loud. I could not hide, and oh my God, I wanted to hide. And I think we all, again, I put someone's feet on me, saying that we all have a secret that we're eating over. Well, my secret was really obvious. I was different. But the other thing that I couldn't hide. And that was the thing that was so painful. I could never, ever, ever fit in. I could never blend. I just genetically was not supposed to blend. I was just not racially supposed to blend. Nothing. So I was bigger than everyone else. And I got teased for being bigger than everyone else. I got teased for all of it. And this is cool. We all get teased. But what I thought maybe could happen was that I could disappear. Well, why don't we stop today and see how that works. My mom was a functional anorexic for my entire growing up. She would always eat dinner on a smaller plate, cut into tiny little bites, and have quickly reduced calorie dressing on top of it. Crazy. Well, this is a model of womanhood that I have, right? My mom was super skinny, and now when I look at pictures of her, I think, oh God, we're deep in the disease. But at the time, I thought, why don't I look like that? Of course, this is not a universal. So I started to sort of starving buying sessions as a teenager. In college, I went to college in Providence, Rhode Island, and Northeast, still the Northeast, didn't think it was going to be that different from home. But there were black people there! Amazing! I didn't know how to relate. Great! There's another way I'm different. So, when I got to school, there's a big refractory, it was called, the dining hall, and there was Little Africa. It was called Big Europe. And I didn't know how to do anything. I didn't know how to do anything. before I did his test, I ate in my dorm room. And I ate like a motherfucker. See, there we go. There we go. I ate. And I didn't gain the freshman 15. Oh, that's weird. I got bigger. And I was afraid to eat. I didn't want to sit in a long plate. And so I would eat, and I spent tons of money not on the food plan eating because I didn't want to go in D.C. Okay, so finally, my mom, my freshman year, I called her January, and I said, I don't know where to sit, and she said, I don't care. Brilliant. So that's where I practice the alarm. The alarm is raised to where I know the time and all that nonsense. Okay, so. And then I began to eat somewhat normally, and didn't you know I got a boyfriend? Yes! Got a boyfriend. I got Ethan. Exactly. Okay, so whatever. Millions later, still the same guy. I didn't say that. Okay. I'm only telling you guys this story because I think it's so important. I'm so important to hear how it was. And for me, how it was, I was always trying to fit this ideal. The ideal is actually in, it's an application, but there's a book about some kind of blonde thinness. And I was always trying to get over that way. Or be an ideal African-American woman with a curvy body and a juicy, groovy arm. Those things aren't available to me. Neither one of those. I'm genetically who I am, and that's part of the acceptance. So the body obsession for me was always, I was supposed to fit into one of those boxes, and it didn't quite work. So after college, I moved to New York. I started working in magazines. And I worked in a building where in the afternoons at lunch, the restroom right by the cafeteria was full of girls growing up. And I used to think, oh, well, there it is. Like, I thought I was different from women. So funny, because I would do this every night for hours and hours. I was on the elliptical machine so much that I busted my knees. Do you know how hard that is? The elliptical machine just made you save your knees, but I was so angry. I was so in the calories and the numbers and the math and the dieting, and I was just a full obsession. That was New York. Then I moved to Los Angeles to become a writer for the tree. And when I got here, I moved without my husband. He was still living in New York. I had this thing. It is a Mrs. Smith deep dish apple pie. They don't make it anymore. Not like that. But I grew up on that food. And in fact, I used to get it as gifts. Literally, my gift, my grandparents' house, that my grandfather had bought one of those at the supermarket, and it was a big amount of things to eat. When I moved out here, I bought Mrs. Smith's deep dish apple pie a week. I ate one a week because I was lonely, because I was scared, because they didn't know what I was doing, and food was my best friend. And that is the thing that has been the controlling thing, that food, or lack of food, either one, has been the thing that has sustained me when I could not sustain myself. The whole point of being in this room for me is that I have to sustain myself with God. I put the food down, I bring God in, and suddenly I'm okay. But without God, I'm just in the room. I don't have a middle ground. Okay, so I get here, I'm eating the pie, all good when eating the pie. That's the one food I received from, literally. I cannot eat this food. Dish apple pie. Other apple pie I can eat, by the way. I can totally walk away from it. It's not a problem. That, I don't know, transact something I want. Okay, so, anyway, I bombed out here. We read my name in the room. What happened? I joined the gym. I was up to my old, fun, exercise media, anorexic tricks again, counting things out of bags. Because we had nutrition labels. By the time I got here, nutrition labels were on everything. Yes, this is ultimately an anorexic trend, right? This is so awesome. So I'm measuring and weighing. For some people, by the way, measuring and weighing is their way out of this. That, for me, is the way in. So I was excited and having fun, and my marriage was falling apart. My husband was not married to a person, he was married to an equation. So all I said were things about what I was eating. My husband wanted to have a child, and I said to him, I can't have a child, I'll get fat. That was it. So getting fat is the worst thing that could happen. That was the worst thing that could happen. So, Marriage falling apart, work crazy, spending all the time there and focused on that. Family relationship falling apart, whole life totally fucked up, but I was the appropriate physical size. Or so I thought. My husband said, I think I'm probably going to leave you spiritually. And I said, wow, that's not good. And I had a moment where I actually had to take myself to tears. And I had to go and say, I have so much anxiety. I'm under so much strain because my husband is leaving me. I need medication to get through this. And I had a fellow at that job, and well, she wasn't my fellow then. She said, you know, I think maybe it would be good for you to eat 3 meals a day. She said, well, you're getting really thin. And for me, as I'm sure for many, I mean, I've heard it from other people, and other anorexics, et cetera, when someone is afraid of you, afraid for you, that is stuff. That's like, yeah, man, I'm just kidding, but you're afraid, awesome. Nope. I'm good. My mom did it. My mom, I said, Mom, look how skinny I am. She said, you still have about 5 pounds to lose. I went on Saturday. She left that Saturday. Sunday, my app was in the room and it had not been out. I had not left the room because I belong here, period. I haven't been in this room in a while because, strangely enough, I started working a program. My husband and I repaired our relationship. We had a baby girl. My career got bigger. My life became fuller when it wasn't about the food. What all was happening. One of the things I wanted to talk about. One of the things I wanted to talk about was that the controlling problem I have now is one of anxiety. That is the thing that I realized has driven me more than anything, the fear of failing from that early message from my parents, you have to get an A at all times, the fear of being perceived, that someone would actually see through and call me out on my, I have an imposter syndrome. I'm waiting for you to say, actually, you're full of shit. That's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for you to come up to me and tap me on the shoulder and say, and please, no one do this. And it is shocking. A, it's never happened. B, people don't really do that. But C, it's the thing that has kept me totally trapped mentally. So I just wanted to pull out a couple things from the big book that are really, really important to me. And the first one is, I say the first 3 steps in the morning and night, in addition to the other things that I say. But when I say the 3rd step, comes from Michael Cousins, the answer. Maxwell looks at me in the office, but we have turned our will and our lives and our work over to the care of God. When I get on my knees and I say the 3rd step, what I say is, I turn my will and my life and my work, I would say, and my love, over to the care of God. And the reason I have to say that is because work will become Jesus for me if I am not careful. Because I want approval and money. I have ego and greed and all those things. Those things were sown into me as a kid. If you got A's and everybody liked you, you were safe. If you got A's and everybody liked you, not only did my parents like me, but the other world liked me, and all the people who were theoretically coming to get me because I was black. This is what they told me, my parents. Great, by the way. It is not good to tell a 9-year-old the grandmother of the Klan lives in Shelton, Connecticut, which is half an hour away from my house. It's not good. Don't tell a 9-year-old that. Anyway, that's an outside issue. Okay, so we turn our will and our lives and our work over to the care of God. For me, that is crucial. It is crucial to actually say the practical application is that when I write something at work and I turn it in, I have turned it over not to my boss but to the care of God. That is the most important thing to me because it's a controlling issue for me. Otherwise, I will hold it and rewrite it or cry or shake until you tell me I'm a good girl. But if I turn it over to the care of God, then it's up to God. However anyone else receives it or whatever, it's up to God. It doesn't matter. Okay. So along those lines, We trust infinite God rather than our finite God. We are in the world to play the role He assigned. Just to the extent that we do, we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him to enable us to match calamity with strength. In the year 2011, I had a baby, January 24th, my daughter, awesome kid. My delivery was very traumatic. I had a fever during the delivery. I was in the hospital for a week. Very traumatic. I got home, my mom and my in-laws came, that was traumatic. You know? And then 6 weeks later, my dad died. Dropped dead of a heart attack. So, and then 6 months after that, my daughter was pregnant. And I'm not going to say I was serious. Various of you in this room know I wasn't serious. I was mad. I was really angry at God. But what I did know was that I had to keep going. And what I did do was keep going with the help of God. Many people in my life said, that situation would take me out. We don't have the option anymore to get taken out. We got taken out already. It's like everybody gets an opportunity in life to get taken out. We already got taken out. I'm not going to talk. I'm eating all that food. And I'm not going outside. I didn't have social life. I already chose taken out already, so I can't do that. And I had a little tiny person who needed me to keep going. So I kept going. And that was the role God assigned at the time. I was in the world to play the role God assigned. I can match calamity with serenity, that calamity with serenity, if I know this is where I'm supposed to be at this given time. And the only way to know that is to say, I've turned my will and my life and my work and my love, people that I love, to the care of God. This is all healthy building anxiety, y'all. This is not what you should really find. This is for me, this is what works. Let's see. Okay. When I encountered this disappointment or frustration, as I did more and more frequently, my solution was to drink, exercise, stop, look at myself in the mirror, try on a thousand different pairs of outfits, try to figure out a way to make you think I look the right way. I had always been oversensitive to criticism and was acutely so now. When I was criticized or reprimanded, the bottle of my refuge and comfort. Okay, so this is very important because it's about criticism. Again, this goes back to the thing that I started with. If I don't get an A, I'm totally fucked. Totally fucked. Totally fucked. You don't get an A, I'm totally fucked. Oh, wait, I'm oversensitive to criticism. But perhaps your criticism, or whatever you have to say, is none of my business because I have to ask myself, how important is it really? How important is it compared to my serenity and my emotional sobriety? And when I place my value on serenity and sobriety more than anything else, I can maintain it at a higher level. Okay, so I'm going to close with this. We are taught to differentiate between our wants, which are never satisfied, and our needs, which are always provided for. When I have a baby, and when my dad died, I ended up with this support system that I didn't see coming. I didn't know I was going to get. And my husband showed up, my best friend showed up, people showed up, fellows showed up in ways that I could not have seen coming. My mom showed up. This is a woman who's a complete narcissist, okay? Totally, fully self-obsessed, but was able in some ways to show up. Shocker. Because my needs were provided for. We cast off the burdens of the past and the anxieties of the future as we begin to live in the present one day at a time. Quickly, I have a big question hanging over my career right now. A huge question. But the answer has already been written. So there's no anxiety because God, and I haven't read it, sure. But I'm saying, there's no true anxiety because God has made that decision, and whatever it is, God will, is the best thing that can happen. It's the best thing that's happened. It's the only way I can walk through it. Am I done? You have 2 minutes. Okay, so in those 2 minutes, I will just say quickly, because I was wanting this. My absolute is I eat 3 meals a day. I do snacks now. I didn't need to, but when I got pregnant, unfortunately, it was difficult to change. The abstinence that worked was the abstinence that worked. So I had to adapt because my body was changing. So then I took snacking back if I had to, and I haven't put it down yet. We'll see what happens. But more than that, I say my prayer, serenity prayer, first step prayer, first 3 steps. I pray throughout the day, God, and help me through this. God, I'm so grateful for this. God, just constantly, I maintain a constant conversation. I keep the channel open. Because I find that when I hit click on that channel, like when I close the phone to God, my brain's a bad neighborhood. I should go there at night or by myself. So I do that. I go to Mrs. Smith, come get apple pie. I think we should make it to the restaurant. And I think that's pretty much my basic abstinence. I have not been able to pick up exercise in a healthy way, and that's the way that my abstinence and my food plan always is still looking perfect. I still have problems with the gym. I go in there, I compare and despair. I wish I was my old self. I wish I were version of my old self. She's crazy, but she has a great body. And the other thing I will end with is that what I am hoping, and it's God's will, but what I'm hoping is that I don't model this disease for my kids. My daughter is very pretty already. Like, facially, she's a very pretty baby. And people constantly comment on it. And I'm always like, don't say that to her, because I don't want them to put that on. The truth is, she's going to be fine if her mom's in program. She's going to be fine because I am going to be able to pray and think before I speak, unlike the people that I was raised by. Like, I get to have a chance to be a decent parent because I'm in the group. And so even though it's sometimes hard to walk away from her to go to meetings, it's better for her and better for me than so on with that. Thank you. This is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at the meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any of us, any one of us, after the meeting. Also, please remember the opinions of the leader are my own, and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. How do I deal with comparing fair issues around the issue of body? Some days not well, and some days okay. And part of it, honestly, is that the only body that could have made my kid. So I really can't get into everybody, but let's pretend I haven't had a child. My mom and my dad came together to have a baby. My dad was 6'3", big broad shoulders, huge feet. My mother's 5'8", slim, curvy, the appropriate sort of Venus cotton tie shape, right? But here's the deal. Those two people had a daughter. Me. That's it. Like, I can't take someone else's genetics because I didn't have someone else's parents. So when it comes right down to it, God's will was that those two people met in college, they got together, like, really seriously, like, when I get into this, like, sure, would I like to wake up tomorrow and look like Beyonce Knowles? Absolutely. Because then I have to have her dad. No, thank you. And the truth is, I don't really want to be blonde in the skin. The truth, what I want to look like is Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I'm sorry, it's not that issue. But I'm just saying, I want to have, like, tight. But the thing is, I don't have time. Okay? I actually only have time to be in my life fully. And when I was like that, I had no life. So the ultimate choice is I can choose to like go after that totally, but I know what it looks like already because I did it. And I don't think I'd do it better now. I think I'd probably do it worse and be able to progress. I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Sure.
Do you weigh yourself as you do? Do you have a ritual around
I forgot. The question was, do I weigh myself? And I forgot to say that about my abstinence. I do not know how much I weigh, and I do not know how much you weigh. And they are equally important. If you tell me how much you weigh, I will talk about it. And if I know how much I weigh, forget it. I'm out. However, when I was pregnant, there was no avoiding that. So I can address the question in this way. What I did was I said, this is God's will. Whatever the number is, this is God's will. Now, I did know I was cooking someone else, so I was like, okay, she needs whatever she needs. But it was absolutely 100% necessary to know that I was always walking in God's will, and that my judgment of that number was nonsense because it was my judgment. So I couldn't get in that number. It was a super ugly number the last time I saw it. Like, it was not a number I would desire. It did not begin with a one. And I was saying, okay, God. I had a sponsor who used to say to me, the first, when you are displeased by something, the first two words of your prayer should be, okay, God. Yes, yes, God, yes. Okay, I accept. Okay, God. So, is there a ritual I would propose? I mean, okay, God, thank you.
Thank you for talking about work. I was wondering, do you feel like in order to have a balanced life and a spiritual life, that you just have to put down the workaholism? Can you do your job as well as you could with gripping and doing it in a non-recovery way? Or do you just have to accept that if you're in recovery, you're just going to be a little bit less than that?
That's a really great question. The question is, can you be an overachiever and be a spiritual life? And I think, A, God willing that I'm an overachiever. B, I have two index cards taped on my computer at home. And they're specific to what I do, but I will share them with you because I think they're very helpful. God, will you hold my left hand while I scribble with my right? And God, I'll take care of the quantity, you take care of the quality. So those two prayers actually that's how I address it, which is like, I am a hard driving, when I'm working, but I have to work with God. I used to eat while writing. I would write a little and eat. And write a little and eat. That's how I used to do it. And then I put down food and I would write a little and suck. And write a little and suck. All in God. Still, I had to take the edge off, okay? So that kind of workaholism didn't work. What does work is write a little, pray, write a little, do the thing first. So yes, I do think that I just can't exist without making myself totally insane. A friend of mine said, I saw you open up a vein and bleed it onto the page. And I probably did, but the reason I didn't die is because God put more blood in me on the other side.
What do you think helped you learn to place the body in which you just judging yourself? Just like that obsession for your work.
The question is, what has helped me most with body obsession? Body obsession is a daily struggle. I'm not going to say it's super easy to pick what I was going to wear here today. True. And you guys are a room full of overeaters, right? So you should be able to accept me however I look, right? Theoretically, oh no, that's a judge. But what I will say is this. The time that I lose in that mirror, I don't have any more. You know we're powerless over the first thought? I truly believe that. The first thought is always going to be, can I do something? Can I do something? I'm the worst person, whatever that is. but we're not powerless of the second thought. And if the second thought is, I've done this before, I've made myself crazy, human, passionate, over the fact that I don't look the way that I want to, I've done that before. Is there something else I can do? What I did on first few moons, actually, was I would literally pick up a book or watch TV. Like, I would have to literally physically remove myself from the mirror or whatever I was doing in order to just do it. Concentrate on something else. Change the subject. Literally, that's what I had to do. Now, I can pray, and like I said before, weirdly enough, remember I said to my husband, I can't have a baby because I'll get fat. Well, I don't have the body that I want, and I know there are people, whatever. But I will say this, having a baby can help. I don't have time for that bullshit, but she doesn't care. And I did something with it. As women, I think this is true of everybody, but as I'll speak as a woman, how you look is what you are in terms of worth on the commodity scale in a lot of different ways. But it's not what I am. I'm not a person. And so that totally, I mean, even in my darkest moments, that does help. But I would say, change the subject at first. At first, it's just a workmanlike thing of like, okay, I'm going to paint a picture. I'm going to draw something. I'm going to call a friend. I'm going to move the discussion. And then over time, what it becomes is I'm going to pray. I'm going to say, God, help me accept it. Help me see something beautiful. The other thing that someone told me was, find something you like about yourself and go to the back. Find something you like about your beautiful self. One thing. Even if you like that all your fingers and toes are well formed, and that you don't have to have surgery to separate from that today. Even if it's that you don't have, like, I don't even know, there's a million different things, but if you can be grateful for the fact that your body works today, that can help. So, or be grateful for the fact that you woke up this morning, your body works, you know, any number of things, but get into gratitude and change subject. Change subject and then get into gratitude. Well, however it works, but that's what I mean.
Hi, thank you so much for your share. Can you talk a little bit more about how you match calamity with serenity?
Sure. The question is how I match calamity with serenity. I will give you a specific example. So I'm working on this big project, and it's a project, if it gets a yes, my career will change in a lot of ways. So I turn in the thing, right? Here comes calamity. What do I do? Okay. So I make a lot of phone calls. The first thing that this program taught me to do is not do this, not hold the anxiety to myself. So I make phone calls. I call fellows. That's the first thing I do. And fellows give me back serenity. First thing that happens is, when it's not about you, it's a big bowl of serenity. Oh, God, well, God, right? So you call fellows. That's what I do. I call fellows. Fellows will give that back to me immediately. My brain is empty of strength. Then the next thing I do, well, before I get into a calamity that I can see coming, like turning something, I get on my knees and I say, God, I'm going to do it. Okay? God says, okay. But then, after I call on the fellows, and I've heard the message a few times, even if I didn't like hearing it, even if I thought while they were talking, was, fuck you, bitch, you know, because it is sometimes, then the next thing I will do is I will say, okay, God, and I will write, what my journal is full of it, God, let me be Zion. I write that over and over again, God, let me be Zion. Because I'm really a function of God's will in the universe, right? All of the big book basically says is God has a purpose for you, God has a plan, here's God's on. So whatever's supposed to happen, I'm God's on. Now, it doesn't mean that I was doing in any situation. It doesn't mean that. But what it does mean is that when I'm frightened, which is a lot of the time, that's calamity. When I'm frightened, that's what I do. I match it with the knowledge of the program from my fellows and the knowledge that I have that God is with me. God is with me. If I talk to God, I will feel better. I will want to, but I do know if I choose to talk to God, I will feel better. I know that. Like, soul, body, soul. Sure.
And your thought of what can change is my question another, so long as you're going to do that. The thing is, you've got some teeth there.
The question is how I do with my mom. Okay, it's here. The short version is this. My mom, I have compassion for her as a newcomer because she never had this program. And finding compassion for the newcomer helped me find compassion for my mother. It was very easy for me to come in the room than someone who had less time than I had, even an hour. She gave less. I could have compassion for him or her, right? So why could I not have compassion for the anorexic who raised me? A. B. As I've grown with serenity, she has changed. And I don't think she changed. I think I changed. But I was able to have love in places that I didn't have. My mother is a widow, suddenly out of the blue. I have a lot of compassion for that. I don't know how I would deal with it. It was a sick, fucked up, twisted marriage. Doesn't matter. She was a widow out of the blue. So I have compassion for that. She loves me. Her love is sometimes painful, sometimes torture, sometimes smothering, but she loves me. Sometimes I don't love myself, so I need to have compassion for someone who loves me. It really is the fourth step, right? Fourth step, tenth step, and compassion for the newcomer. Like, when we, like, working with others is working with my mom. You know, she's still drinking. So, you know, when she's at my house, she eats all day long. All day long. All day. Doesn't stop. And even though I don't understand how God has decided that she can stay thin doing that. I don't have to do that. You know, I don't have to do that. So thank God. You know, but like, thank God. Like, really, that's where it comes from. I'm sorry, I'm
Can you talk a little bit about the role of importance of having a sponsor and being a sponsor?
Sure. And actually, this is great, because this is the biggest question I was afraid of anyone was going to ask. I'm not sponsoring right now. And that was a choice that I made. I kept sponsor. When people need a temporary sponsor, I do that. What happened is that I got pregnant. It was a very difficult pregnancy. I could not figure out a way to juggle it all. And it's very difficult for me to find that. So that's been really hard, and I have shame around it. The importance of having a sponsor, I will say, for me, I had a very difficult relationship with my last sponsor. Not, like, no animosity. She turned into a friend. And that happens sometimes when you have to sort of move on to someone who you're not afraid of, but someone who keeps a certain boundary with you. The woman that I've been sponsoring recently has given me so much that I am now starting to think, okay, God, I see how this can work. And really how it works is she calls and I drop everything that I'm doing and I talk to her. That I don't have a way. I've always been trying to figure out how to fit time in my day. I don't have time. I will never have time again. But what I can do is say, oh, you're calling. Okay. But right now, I will make time. The importance of having a sponsor for me right now is that my sponsor is a person that I call during the calamity moment, and I say, what am I supposed to do? And she gives me an assignment, which is changing the subject. She gives me an assignment, and I like an A. So if she tells me to do something and I do it, I'll get my A, and I will, my green and my ego will get involved, and they will push me towards spiritual evolution. Sometimes those things are actually engines to get you to a spiritual evolution. You think of them as character defects, and they are, but sometimes they will help you. So that's, in that case, what I would say for me is that having a sponsor allows me to unplug from my hysteria and say to someone else, how can I look at this a different, more spiritual way? And she says to me, here's a spiritual way to look at it. Perhaps you should write a sentence. You should do this, and I do it, and I feel better.